Okay, we are back. I'm glad you're along. This is a fascinating subject. Joining Dave Talbot and I is Wallace, or Wall as we like to call him, Thornhill from Australia. They are co-authors of Thunderbolts of the Gods, available for review on the net at thunderbolts.info. So let's see if Wall is... You there, Wall?
Yes, I am. Thanks, Jeff.
Hi. Nice to talk to you again.
By the way, I've got a bad cold, so if my voice peters out, I've told Dave he can finish my sentence.
Yeah, you're all right, and if a real bad cold is when an Aussie no longer has his accent.
Yes.
it's not that bad yet. Dave is here, so say hi to Dave.
Yeah, hi, Dave.
Well, greetings to you, sir. Yes, indeed.
All right, we've had an hour to discuss basically some of the rudiments of Velikovsky. I think what is interesting to me about Velikovsky is he is becoming a little trendy in some circles now. Shall we put it that way? There are folks who are jumping on the Velikovsky bandwagon, and it's kind of an interesting little avenue of departure we're on here.
Yes. Yeah, it was certainly the point of departure for me. I read his book a year or so after he published it in the 50s, and I managed to visit him before he died in 1979, and I spoke to him about the problems of the electrical nature of the solar system. So, my contact with him was, as far as I'm concerned, just what I would have wanted.
How did he present, let me ask Wall first, then we'll get to you, Dave. How did he present, toward the end of his life, his theories, his material, his research, his concept of the workings of the solar system? Had they changed? Had they grown? Had they matured? Or were they pretty much as they were when he published his book in 1950?
I think essentially they were the same. He was still puzzled as to the relationship between gravity and the electric force, and that was the thing we discussed when I was with him. But I think the advances came for him in his working with Ralph Jurgens, the engineer, because he was the one who put forward the electrical nature of the solar system and the sun. And I think that helped considerably Velikovsky's case, although it seemed nobody was really listening at the time.
All right, Dave, pretty much the same view you hold?
I think Wall is absolutely correct that Velikovsky did not continue to elaborate his interpretation of mythological sources. And there was an issue with many of us there, and the issue continued to grow, and it was a source of some strain with Velikovsky. And Wall and I have been in agreement for years now that Velikovsky was wrong on many, many details. And when it comes to Velikovsky's place in the history of science, Jeff, we are in absolute accord. Velikovsky is a pioneer of the highest order, and his work is going to change the way human beings see the universe. We see terrestrial history the way we see human history.
Human
this
history,
we have no doubt.
Right. There are those who suggest, and there is more and more evidence, even some mainstream scientists are chiming in now, that there is something to the zero-point energy theory and concept. Now, do we tie the zero-point energy concept into the electric universe? Is that pretty much the same thing?
No, not in my opinion. The zero-point energy comes about, from my point of view, from a flawed view of what matter is and how the universe is actually built.
Okay.
In my view, the universe and all the matter in it is an electrical phenomenon, and it forms particles and so on like that in space in sort of resonant systems. And this is something that is not talked about, although when you think about it, quantum theory is just all about resonant systems of particles. And so this idea of energy being out there in the vacuum ready to tap into is sort of based on a probabilistic view of the universe, which is something that Einstein hated. He felt that God didn't play dice, with the universe, and I agree with him.
Do you have a view of the so-called vacuum in the universe, then, that includes the electrical nature of things, as you see?
Yes, yes. In my view, the universe is electrically driven. We don't know the source of that energy, but it's obvious in all its manifestations. The fact that galaxies and stars glow in the night sky is one of the consequences.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually lit electrically. Nuclear energy is more or less a sideshow in all of that. And this is quite at odds with our standard view of how stars work and all that kind of thing.
David, the common understanding, the perception of three key items is cloudy at best: electricity, gravity, and magnetism. And I hate to even put that out on the table, but is there any way you can try and tackle that and make some sense of it?
I think I ought to give you a very authoritative scientific verdict on that, since this Wall will be sitting there shuddering as he listens to me guess at the answer to that question.
Well, that's, see, and we'll go ahead and have at it, and then we'll listen to Wall. And,
well, I do believe that the universe is ultimately unified. I would speak philosophically to what Wall would speak scientifically on. I am completely convinced that electricity is a unifying force. Electromagnetism is a unifying force in the heavens, that there are no isolated islands in space, and that human beings share in the electrical connectivity of all things in the universe. What I'm attracted to in Wall's work is that he has taken an interdisciplinary approach to pursue the threads of electricity through all of the different levels, microcosm up to macrocosm. Mm. And he has really paid his dues. Wall has looked at everything from an interdisciplinary vantage point, and Wall has emerged as a tremendous pioneer when it comes to the electric universe.
All right, Wall, it's your turn. Electricity, gravity, and magnetism. People are still debating gravity and magnetism, and electricity
That's
is knocking
right.
at the door on the outside. So how do we look at this from your scientific perspective?
Well, if we accept that the electric force is fundamental, we can then derive the magnetic force and gravity from the interactions of matter at different levels of size, so that magnetism is at the size of the electron, say. But the idea that I came across some years ago from a chap in New York, who was actually a self-taught physicist and a mathematician, was that electrons and all particles are made up of even smaller charged particles. And when you say that, then that offers an answer to what gravity is, because you can look at gravity as being merely the distortion of subatomic particles. I don't want to go into detail, but the whole thing hangs together as a coherent picture, and it gets rid of all of these odd particles that the particle physicists keep finding. You don't need to explain them other than being just short-lived resonant structures in this electrical environment. And the same with gravity. It's very easy to explain it, and it fits all of the observations, and you don't require to make gravity a mysterious force, as Einstein did.
Interesting. I'm following you. Go ahead.
Yeah, it just simplifies everything, and this is the way you'd expect the universe to work. It's a very simple mechanism. It's just that when it operates on all the different scales, the results are quite amazing. Everything from, you know, subatomic particles to living things, to planets and stars and galaxies.
What's interesting to me is how we're so arrogant in so many ways. We think we know it all. And here you're talking about smaller elements that make up electrons and protons and neutrons, and perhaps even smaller elements than those. We don't know. We've just now admitted that nanobacteria exist, something that the genius Royal Raymond Rife determined in the 1930s. Of course, he was persecuted as well. Are you putting your theory together with David in a book, and are you making any headway in getting even a peer-reviewed article synopsizing it published, or are you still on the outside?
I think the publicity is picking up. We are on the outside, and there is this problem of how do you get peer review when you have no peers? There's nobody else doing this work.
I understand.
But what I do is to keep in touch with people in the mainstream scientific area, so that I've kept my feet on the ground as far as I can. And also, in there's a group of scholars and scientists and that working with us, because this is not the kind of thing that one individual can do.
Oh, good, well put.
Mm. So I'm very pleased that Dave has done an amazing job of organizing this group of people, and they are so supportive, and they, you know, I'm quite happy to be corrected and picked up on my mistakes, and it helps me enormously.
Well, that's fine. Stand by, Wal and Dave. And, you know, if the theory as proposed by Wal Thornhill and David Talbot holds up to all measurements and evaluations, its day will come. It's just a matter of time. That's the way it is. And fine-tuning, of course, in every theory. But what you proposed is extraordinary, and I have to think that the Mr. Velikovsky is smiling. This moment, even though he never smiled much
nice
while he was on this plane.
Yes,
I do. All right, stand by. We'll be right back. Okay, and we are back, talking with Wal Thornhill and David Talbot. You know, it's been a number of years since we really went into this. Some of the earlier programs, I'll never forget. I don't remember every detail of them, but I remember all the images and pictures and so forth to point to the discoveries made in our ancient human history, which absolutely verify Velikovsky's work 100%. I mean, there's just not much argument out there. Well, when you see people edging closer and leaning on the great man's legacy for their own advancement, shall we say, I guess you have mixed feelings about that. It's good to see him get the notoriety, and yet the use of someone like that, you know, an opportunism comes to mind as a word that describes it. It happens. And I guess that's just the way of the human nature of our times. And there's not much we can do about it. Are you optimistic that Velikovsky will make it sooner rather than later? I think his time will come.
Yes.
What's your timetable on it?
I think as soon as we manage, that's Dave and I and the people associated with us, manage to get a good hearing in public, people will see just what common sense it makes, and then we also, I think, give a very balanced view of Velikovsky's contribution to the whole thing, and how he was the original pioneer for these ideas.
There are still people. There are still people, of course, seeking to eviscerate the man and trash
yes.
him.
Well, I think that as in any endeavor where you're looking for the truth will come out eventually, and I don't take much notice of people who denigrate him, because in effect, by attacking another person for their ideas, you're actually denigrating yourself.
Indeed. One of the little signs of the truth coming out is, to me, always when it begins to become trendy and chic among certain circles, and when people do opportunistically begin to use it. They discover something new and novel, and that helps bring the word out, if nothing else. So when you make, you and David, the formal presentation and your group of people, I would expect this to have pretty wide-ranging ramifications, just from my layman's perspective. And what Dave said earlier, I think merits repeating here, that science as we know it is basically teetering on the brink of either a renovation, a complete rehabilitation, or its own demise.
You know, Jeff, yes. It might be of interest to your listeners that we just maybe run down a list of places, theoretical tenets that are undermined completely by the direction of space age discovery. And Wall would be the one to talk on particulars, so I can just enumerate a list, and then we can follow any direction that you might have of interest. But
sure. Modern cosmology,
beginning with the Big Bang,
right.
running through the electrically neutral, electrically inactive universe, gravity driving everything, then summoning black holes and dark energy and dark matter, things that are not seen, in order to account for the simple fact that the observations don't work. Everything that we have been taught about the origins of all our solar system, the circumstellar cloud collapsing and the sun being formed from that and igniting the nuclear fusion at its core, planets arising out of that cloud in fixed and stable orbits over billions of years, clockwork, solar system, and so on, the history of the Earth in an uneventful solar system, the rise of civilization beneath a sky that looks almost exactly like our sky today. I mean, none of this is going to stand up. The snowball theory of comets, this is all going to be challenged imminently now. There are things occurring in the space age, such as the mission to Comet Temple 2, Deep Impact mission. That's July 4th. They're firing a projectile mm-hmm. at this cometary nucleus. And if that hits a rock, mm-hmm. not a snowball mm-hmm. sublimating in the heat of the sun, mm-hmm. that is the beginning of a domino effect. Because what is left, if that is just a rock, mm-hmm. is the electric comet hypothesis. But you can't have an electric comet hypothesis unless there's an electric field of the sun. And if comets discharging out beyond the orbit of Jupiter are discharging electrically, there is an electric field sufficient to power the sun. And if planets are moving through that electric field, you can't talk about the uneventful solar system. You have to deal with the possibility that all of the surface features that we recognize, that we see today, were created in a historic epoch that is unlike anything that we are experiencing today. That electrical phenomena sculpted the surfaces of these planets. There is no end to the domino effect, in other words. So that's just a kind of a philosophical overview of the kind of subjects that Wall is eminently qualified to discuss.
Wall, has the electric nature of our solar system or the universe ebbed or surged over time, or does it remain relatively constant? It's an impossible question, I know, but
it has ebbed, actually, because at the end of the 1800s, the journals Scientific American and Nature and so on carried articles by some of their correspondents talking about the electrical nature of comets and the possible electrical nature of the sun's atmosphere, although there's no suggestion that the sun was actually powered electrically at that time. Getting back to your original question.
We'll do a little break here and come back and continue with your reply to my question, if we would, in just a couple of minutes. Right back with David Talbot and Wall Thornhill. Okay, and welcome back. Another wonderful conversation with David Talbot and Wall Thornhill. We are really on the cusp of a whole new science, and it's about time. We are wallowing around in what amounts to almost a medieval milieu in so many areas of science, and here we have a couple of gentlemen who are coming forward with literally an entire new logical, pragmatic cosmology that demands attention. And it will get it, and it is beginning to happen. Wall, you want to go ahead, please?
Yes, you're talking about how the change might occur and when it might occur.
Yes.
In my view, it will be a cultural change and work from the grassroots up, because science itself has become so rigid that they're not going to be accepting radically new ideas anytime soon.
Yeah, rigid. I would describe it as rigor mortis rather than rigid.
That's right. They distance themselves from the general populace by their use of specialized language, and journalists don't actually question them. They just accept the handouts and print them in the paper without much analysis or investigative journalism, which I think is a great pity.
Mm-hmm.
What we're offering is a way for people to look at things in very simple terms. You get back to the age of the garage experimenter. You can actually do experiments in your own garage to test some of the ideas. And I think it will give the inventors a new fillip, and also kids at school. They will see that there are alternatives, and they can actually pursue them in their own time, and it may give a much-needed boost to people studying science and engineering.
Well, you know, the upside of this is rather obvious, and that is that your work could literally energize and make science exciting to an entire new generation of young men and women
beautiful.
Who are interested.
Yes, yes, that's what I think.
Yes, indeed, Jeff. In our vision of the future, the restoration of inspiration within educational institutions and within the sciences is such an appealing and compelling part. Science has lost its inspiration. You can see this in the universities, the loss of interest in science.
Right.
The media pay very little attention to science except at the most superficial level, and there is a reason. It is boring.
Right.
There's a kind of a self-satisfied or a smug attitude of theoretical science today that is projected outward as if they have the fundamental issues resolved. And we're saying exactly the reverse. Nothing is resolved. All the assumptions are crumbling. The world is going to look completely different as we begin to take into account the force of electricity in the universe and the role of catastrophic, intensely experienced events in human experience only a few thousand years ago. Those two things coming together in a convergence right now have the power to completely transform human perception, I believe. And out comes this incredible inspiration. I mean, this is the
right.
possibility of sweeping discoveries now. It is an inspiration.
Let's talk about Bielakowski's original contribution about Saturn.
Ooh, yeah.
Dave, you want to start, and then we'll go to Walt.
Well, I was the beneficiary of a privately circulated summary of Velikovsky's ideas about Saturn years before they kind of came into the public domain. This was back in 72. This was very much a part of my initial inspiration with Velikovsky's work. And Velikovsky had, of course, talked about this comet in the sky, the planet Venus, and he had talked about the unstable epoch of Martian catastrophe in the middle of the first millennium BC, but he had originally included a section of worlds in collision on the planet Saturn. He said that Saturn is identified as presiding over this unique epoch called the Golden Age, and that an event occurred, a destabilizing, an explosion or nova-like outburst of Saturn was associated with the catastrophic termination of the Golden Age. It really was an incredible idea, but I was seeing it just in outline form, and I really did want to know, well, what did Saturn have to do with human beginnings and so on? And that carried me personally forward, almost living off of adrenaline, Jeff, for several years, until I could see there really was an experience Saturn was at the core of a human experience, intimately associated with the beginnings of civilization. Saturn as the central sun ruling the world. Saturn as the polar night sun. Saturn as the ancient sun god, par excellence, the superior sun, the central sun,
the unmoving
sun.
It's always fascinated me, Dave, how ancient cultures, primitive, so-called primitive cultures, were able to draw our planets, such as the Sumerians, and one of them had a ring around it. And they didn't have telescopes then.
There was something called the enclosure of life. That was a Sumerian phrase. The idea was this luminous, radiant enclosure of heaven. And quite frankly, about 20% of all of world mythology relates to that. That's the turning wheel of heaven. That's the womb of the mother goddess. That's the temple of heaven, the city of heaven, the kingdom of heaven. That surrounding band is the surrounding ocean or river or circumscribing rope, this sort of thing. There is a complex of mythical images. They're so different, but they actually do systematically trace to this idea of the enclosure of the gods, the enclosure of life, the land of the gods, in the sky. That's where the gods dwelled, in the sky, if you follow the myths back to their beginning. And then over time, storytellers progressively reduced that lost, that image of the lost land of the gods. They brought it down to earth, and there was a lot of confusion that followed. Trace it back to the beginnings, and there is no question about it. This was something seen in the heavens, and that image of the sky takes you right back to the universal monarch, the universal sovereign, the God who ruled the Golden Age and fell from the sky in this overwhelming catastrophe. The great catastrophes were universally remembered as the event that terminated the Golden Age.
Wow. All right, stand by. We'll come back and hear from Wall on the Saturn hypothesis in just a couple of minutes. I'm Jeff Rentz, reminding you to visit our website at Rentz.com. That's R-E-N-S-E.com for news, real news from around the world for people who think. Back in a minute. Dave Talbot and Wall Thornhill. And Wall, go ahead and talk to us about Saturn and its once and former mighty place in the heavens, apparently, at least vis-a-vis viewing from Earth.
Yes, Jeff. I was inspired by that same article that Velikovsky wrote when it was finally published. And by that time, Ralph Jergen's idea of the electric nature of the sun had already been published, and I'd had a long time to think about that. And it seemed fairly obvious to me that Saturn must have occupied somewhere different in the galaxy, if you like, close to the sun, but not involved in the sun's electrical activity, so that it formed a small sun of its own. That raised all sorts of interesting issues, because that would mean then that we're not a native of this solar system, neither is Venus and neither is Mars, which was a bit of a mind-boggling thought. But there's a very simple test you can make to see whether that is a viable idea, and that is that all planets that are spinning act like gyros, and all gyros tend to point always to the same point in space. So if we were orbiting Saturn in the past, we would naturally have our axes pointing in the same direction. And even after all that disruptive activity that was chronicled by Velikovsky and others, those axes would still point roughly in the same direction. And when you look today, Saturn, Mars, and Earth all have about the same axial tilt within a degree or two. And that is something that no theory of the formation of the solar system can explain.
And just to underscore that, none of the other planets share that.
That's right. Venus, of course, is an odd one, but I can explain that too, but I won't do it on your show because it takes a little while. But the fact is, if it was born recently, then it would tend to have a retrograde spin, which it does.
Okay. What about Jupiter, Wall?
Jupiter's a puzzle to me. It looks as if it was possibly captured by the Sun, too, because when you look at all of the distant stars that they've discovered planets orbiting around, they all have their planets very close to the star, which is what I'd expect if planets are born or gas giants are born from inside stars. And
give us an example in our solar system. How close would you project that other solar systems' natural planets would be?
Yeah, if you can imagine Jupiter orbiting well within the orbit of Mercury.
That's
the sort of thing we're talking about. And, of course, this doesn't fit at all with the idea that the gas giants accreted in the outer solar system where hydrogen and that was plentiful.
Right.
It just doesn't work. But it does fit with the electrical view that gas giants are formed when a star has a mighty coronal mass ejection, if you like to put it that way. So it suggests that Jupiter and Saturn were once independent bodies because having orbits so far from the Sun suggests they were captured rather than born from the Sun.
And even more so for the outer planets, I would surmise.
Yes, that's true.
Good, Dave. So what we have here is the specter for our listeners of our sun collecting a family, so to speak, as it travels around.
Yeah, that happens too. Sorry, Dave. I should mention that the electrical model of the sun actually facilitates capture. It's something that can't happen very easily in a gravitational system.
But in
an electrical system, you can dissipate energy very effectively, and that causes capture.
Jeff, I think the story of comets also integrates very well into this.
Yeah, please.
We received a picture of comets over recent decades, the modern myth of comets. Number one, they are chunks of ice sublimating in the sun. Number two, they are knocked into the inner regions of the solar system from an Oort cloud in the very remote regions under the influence of the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And this was all theory. This was all abstraction, really. It's not as if someone could say as science that that's the nature of a comet and that is the nature of cometary origins. The electric hypothesis of comets is so far from that abstract model of the Oort cloud and the sublimating snowball and actually addresses what we have discovered about comets, the X-rays emitted by comets, coma temperatures up to 2 million degrees, the sculpting of the surfaces of comets with very craggy, cratered relief. This is
2 million degrees?
2 million degrees. The ability of comets to entrain positive ions, hydrogen ions from the sun,
mm-hmm.
up to a total mass equivalent to the mass of the comet nucleus itself. A comet, under the traditional scientific definition, shouldn't entrain any ions.
Well, it shouldn't be emitting energy like X-rays either, should it?
No, of course not. So there is a profile of comets, every detail of which has come as a surprise to traditional theory and has caused them to scramble for ad hoc explanations.
Right.
And there is then an electrical model under which every surprising attribute is predictable. And I do credit Wall Thornhill for having recognized way back in the early 70s that Ralph Jurgens' model of the electric sun and the electric comet was absolutely sound. And that was part of the inspiration, I believe, for Wall in causing him to devote his life to the exploration of these phenomena.
That's correct. In fact, that was one of the reasons I visited Velikovsky too, because I realized that the last remaining piece to fathom how the solar system could appear so peaceful today after all of that mayhem only thousands of years ago rested on what we believe the gravitational force to be. And I knew that Velikovsky felt that it was an electrical phenomenon, but he was dissatisfied with his explanation because he couldn't actually go right down to the nuts and bolts and say, you know, here's the answer. But he gave me sufficient ideas to be able to go away and look around to find other people who might have actually come close to an answer or had pieces of the puzzle. And that's how I finally came to put it together.
Your DVD, VHS is what it was, The Electric Universe, you put out some years ago, David.
Yes, I've taken that off the market because with the developing theory.
Yeah, I was going to ask how. Yeah, I was going to ask that very question. That was a very impressive production, and I'm hearing tonight that it certainly would be much different now had you to do that over again.
Oh, yes, yes, and that was the thing. And also, I was disappointed because the sales were fairly light, and I think it was difficult for people to sit in front of a computer screen and read page after page of this material, even
correct,
if it was intriguing. So I've decided the better way to do it is via a book, and that's why I'm collaborating with Dave to do a complete work which embodies his work and mine, because the two together are far more powerful than either on its own.
That's been the most encouraging thing to me, Jeff, is the power of the convergence. And incidentally, we do have now on our website enough activity going on with our picture of the day that anyone who's finding this kind of conversation a bit wide-ranging and a little too new for themselves can, by working through pictures of the day, just bite-sized additions to an integrated or unified picture. What may not be immediately clear from a first discussion gradually does fall into place for people. I mentioned that our website is doubling in traffic every month. We're demonstrating right now a strategy for bringing all of this into the public domain. And that's thunderbolts.info, and we invite people to just take a look at what's available. Three chapters of Thunderbolts of the Gods and a new picture 5 days a week, primarily focused on electricity in the universe and a radical reinterpretation of planetary history.
How will this lay out graphically for people to approach? People who are interested and want to understand, will you be able to, in the book, present images, graphics, that can make this whole revolutionary approach to understanding the solar system and the universe easier for people to grab
onto? Wow, that is essential, and I do invite people to look at the first three chapters. They're in full color.
Mm.
And it's a full color monograph, over 100 pages. It is very colorful, and you will see images, both scientific and ancient or archaic. And I think we have enough up there to illustrate the potential for this medium to establish our case. And there is much, much more to come.
And
go ahead, DVD. The DVD that's been worked on lends itself to the leading-edge animation, because some of the things that were witnessed in the past are absolutely mind-boggling, and no science fiction film will ever come close to the things that we will have to present.
Last quick question, Walt. We only have about 60 seconds. How peaceful is our solar system now?
Well, it is very peaceful. The problem that we have to come to grips with is that the Sun is a variable star, like all stars, and relies on its power supply. If that were to change overnight, we could be in for a bit of a shock. So talk about global warming and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
We just are not accepting the view that the Sun can change its output, and therefore we can have no guarantees about what the weather will be like tomorrow or in a year's time.
Wow.
Because the Sun may change.
Okay. And Dave, you've noticed the sun doing purportedly unusual things as well.
Yes, I have. And I do believe that issues such as global warming and so on will find a completely new perspective as people begin to see the relationship between the output from the sun and weather on the Earth.
Very good. Well, thank you for coming on with your cold. You sounded just fine.
Very good.
I want to invite you. I want to invite you and David to come on again soon. Maybe we'll bring some images next time and continue our conversation.
Thanks, Jeff.
Many thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, David. And seriously, let me know, and we'll do this again.
I'll follow up with you definitely.
Okay. Thanks much, gentlemen.
Bye for now.
Bye bye. All right. Very good. And we'll pause and come back in just a few minutes.